Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode 75. Ding! We've turned into diamonds. We're wearing diamonds. We're shining bright like a diamond. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Mr. Tim Goodman, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter. Hi, Tim.
Woohoo!
Hi, Jason.
This is our evergreen episode, as we promised last week. This is our deep thoughts and recorded earlier because I'm traveling when you hear this.
You are traveling. I am a diamond dog this week.
Diamond dog. Oh, very nice.
Thank you.
Topical. Too
right,
beautiful. So we're not talking about the news this week because we taped this a little bit earlier. We were straining to come up with like a broad topic to cover instead, and I threw out some stuff about like future of TV and streaming, mm-hmm. and what happens to networks in the future. And you mentioned something that I thought was really interesting, which is just that. It's almost like you can feel the ground shifting beneath your feet, where you have that moment where it used to be that you just turned on the TV and then you set the DVR. And now you have those moments. I have this where I have stuff on the DVR. I have stuff that I have on Blu-ray. And I'm like, yeah, but I could just watch it on Netflix. And I end up like that kind of everything kind of pushing toward the most convenient way of accessing something, which is streaming.
Yeah. And because now once you have powerful bandwidth and high speeds so that there's no lag time and any of that, it's just so much easier. And I kind of feel it. I think I said to you that 5 years ago I stopped getting newspapers, and everything I consume is online. I have magazines I still read, but everything I consume is online. And so lately one of the things that I found, my life is so the network or the TV business as a whole, if you're is a little bit inside baseball, but if you're a TV critic, everybody's shifting away from sending you DVDs, actual discs. You know, we knew this was coming at some point, but everybody's basically sending out links, and not all of them are great because you've got your name all over it. It kind of ruins the experience. And for me, I hate watching on a TV, and not all of the streaming services where you go to can use you can't like sling it on your Chrome and put it over here. You can't get it from your computer to your TV. So maybe that was part of the groundswell where like I was getting access to everything online. But now the thing that I found myself doing more often and I kind of made sure I set everything up sweetly is I got my Roku box and I have all my HBO, I got all my channels that I have. So, you know, I can just watch everything on, you know, and because we're in a world of time shifting, Jason, where you and I probably don't get to most of the shows the day they air.
Almost never.
Almost never. I mean, I think I'm only down to like three or four that at most that I'm watching day of, including, strangely enough, including a series that I'm annoyed at, which is The Walking Dead. I will watch that on Sundays for sure. But yeah, so like there's no need for me to watch something on HBO if I know the next day it's going to be on HBO Go, which I can just get through my Roku box. So what I was doing was I went through and I went to my DVD player, Jason, and I cut like tons and tons of stuff, like because I have Stars too, right? And so you know, I was like, oh, look at all these series that I have like stacked up hours of need to catch up on Outlander. Well, now I don't because I can get I get the entire season on Stars.
Yeah.
So I literally deleted a bunch of stuff off my DVR and I'm starting to do streaming mostly.
Yeah, I've had the same experience. I mean, the danger there is that you have something that you love and then it drops off of your streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you mentioned Outlander. The HBO stuff is a good example too, where I don't feel that way because it's like HBO's got HBO's catalog, but Netflix and Amazon stuff kind of drifts in and out. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit more risky. And I know I've heard from fans like Battlestar Galactica dropped off of Netflix last year and everybody was like, wait, but I was in the middle of that. And Doctor Who just dropped off of all of the streaming services and it's going to come back only on Amazon. And people are like, but I was watching that on Netflix. And now those people either need to subscribe to Amazon Prime or they need to like buy buy the DVDs or the Blu-rays or download them from iTunes or something. So there, right. there are some risks there, but boy, the convenience is, when it works, it's so great. And I've done the same thing where I've deleted things off my DVR. I've not sold or thrown away, but I've sort of, archived, warehoused some of my DVDs and Blu-rays because I don't need them. You know, I can call up. It's much more convenient to just call up an episode of a series that I love just on streaming and do it that way.
Right? It's just like...
So I got a letter here from Donnie in the 206 that I think really plays into this.
Okay.
206 area code, of course.
Seattle, right?
Seattle. Classic. Mm-hmm. Classic area code.
Classic.
It's one of the classics. So this feeds into this too. In your latest podcast, this is a couple weeks ago, you talked about not being able to catch up on The Flash season 2 because Hulu only streams the last 5 episodes. I was talking about how my daughter got caught up on season 1, wanted to dive into season 2, and although we were recording them, we hadn't saved them all. Ooh. And Hulu, you know the deal with Hulu with current season shows is they'll only show you the last 5 that were aired on right. broadcast. Mm-hmm. And he says, I recently also ran into this with American Crime. I think this may be the best show on network TV right now, and I've been trying to convince all my friends to start watching, but both Hulu and ABC.com will only stream the last 5 episodes. So despite the building buzz around the show, they have no way to catch up. I guess they could buy episodes on iTunes, but who's going to do that for a show they've never seen? I wonder if you have any insight about why TV networks do this. It seems to me that allowing viewers to catch up on an entire season could translate to higher live ratings as buzz builds around a particular show, or they could keep the season premiere available. So curious viewers, some people do that,
could
check it out and decide to purchase future episodes. In these times of confusion, thank you, and cratering network ratings, why are they making it so hard to watch their shows? Donnie and the 206. I thought this was a really great letter because it goes back to what you were saying there, which is streaming is so convenient, and it seems like the only inconveniences come in, it's because, like, inconvenience is the business model. Because it seems to me the reason you can't catch up on American Crime is because the networks want to hold over you that if you miss an episode on broadcast, you might never get a chance to see it, or not for a long time. And that seems like a bad reason.
It's a bad reason, and even though I understand that reason, I don't get it, because that letter is great. I think that's something that I've been wanting to write about a little more, and maybe ask people why this is. But it drives me crazy. Like, for example, let's use probably the best example there is, because it's a show no one was really watching. So it's like you need people to watch this. So the fact that you know, before they won the Golden Globe, that you couldn't find Crazy Ex-Girlfriend the first couple of episodes, and you only could see the current ones, made no sense. I mean, that's a right. show that everybody needed to watch constantly. And I think after they won the Globe, they put all the episodes online. Right. So
for a little while.
Yeah. For a little while. But yeah, this drives me insane, because we're not six-year-olds where we are telling each other spoilers and it doesn't matter where you come in a story. Most people will say, oh, well, if you don't have the first episode available, I'm done. That is a non-starter. So why not? Why does that happen?
We were talking last week about Les Moonves and, like, keeping the big picture in mind, and that the shows on the CW make money even if the network doesn't. And I was struck by that too here, because it would seem to me that especially with a new show like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, there's got to be kind of a long game. You want to give people as many different options as possible to watch a show, because maybe season one is really just about accumulating enough buzz that you get a bigger audience for season two. And so making it as streamable as possible that first year, maybe that's better, because I don't understand this idea that you've got a show you want people to start watching, but if they miss the boat the first month that it's on, basically that's it. The door is closed. You can't access it later. It would seem to me like all of these shows, the goal is not for them to run one season and be canceled, right? They lose money that way. They got to run yes. for multiple years. So you're making an investment. So why not invest in letting people see it in any means, you know, any medium possible to get them to watch it, so that it has more value when you bring it back for a season two or season three.
Well, and here's what I don't understand about the logic. Well, I think we're both struggling to find out what the logic is. That's for not right. having the first episodes available and only the current ones. Because here's how I think people would catch up on a show. People love the safety net because we are living in times of confusion. We have too much TV. You're not going to watch something. You're going to miss it. You hear the buzz. You come in. You're late, but everybody's talking about it. You're like, okay, well, I'm gonna, or maybe you're one of the people who say, I want this thing to be renewed before I even commit. And then, well, now it's been renewed. This happens to a lot of shows. We picked it, you know, Vinyl aired one episode and they picked it up, even despite poor ratings, they picked it up for a second season automatically. So, you know, all those kind of things. So let's just, from a network perspective, the convenience of streaming, which is what's going to eventually get everybody who, I don't know why people are not resisting, maybe they're tech phobes or something, but once you get the convenience of it, like, let's just say Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the idea would be, I want to use the convenience of streaming service to binge, because I like binging. I'm going to binge the first five, and you're on episode six next week. I'll watch live.
Yes, exactly.
You know, that's what you do. You catch up, and then you can watch it on the network, theoretically. Well, it may not happen, but at least you want the network wants you to have the opportunity to say, okay, now you caught up. Come watch it on linear, right? Let's just watch it right here.
Well, and I'm okay with the idea that because the argument there would be, well, why do they ever need to watch it on linear? Because
it'll just show up, yeah.
Right. But the thing is, so Sci-Fi did an interesting thing with The Expanse. Not only did they drop the pilot 4 weeks before it aired, they dropped the first four episodes before they aired. But the way they did it, the first one was free everywhere, and then the rest of them were all viewable with a cable login.
Yes.
And I feel like that is the way forward here, is I understand if what you're saying is, look, we can't make these episodes available to everybody in the world because we make money by either doing advertising or by, if we're cable especially, we've got money coming from the providers. Okay, I get you. But then what about making your whole season available to people who can watch it on TV, even if they choose to watch it streaming? That would be a middle step. But, you know, again, if the ultimate goal is to get them to tune in for a season two and a season three and buy the DVDs or the Blu-rays or stream it endlessly on Netflix or whatever, you got to get them on the train first. And if that first season is just a marketing loss leader to get people excited about it so that when season two comes on, because this is what happened with my daughter. She binged Flash season one on Netflix. And she was really into it. And she gets to the end and she's like, I want to watch season two. And if she had done that over the summer, she would have just watched Flash season two with us.
Right.
But she was a little too late and she fell in that uncanny valley place where where episode one of season two was not available anywhere.
Right.
And that's the stupid part of this, right? It's like, how do you get somebody whose family is paying for all of these services to watch this? And in the end, even though we were paying for everything, she couldn't get it. So it's like, it's working against, it's not just people who don't want to pay and want everything given to them. This is also just like people who are paying and are enthusiastic and are going to get converted into weekly viewers, but you got to get them there. And how do you get them there?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a struggle. I like the fact that if I'm already paying for Showtime and HBO and Stars, that they have apps and a streaming service where I log in with my, you know, DirecTV login because I'm already paying for it, and I can watch it streaming. I love that. I love that I can go back into whatever is on. And by the way, it's so much easier to stream to search a streaming service than it is to search network, you know. But if I can go back and watch the entirety of Sopranos, I can do The Wire.
Well, I'm going back through because I stopped midway. I'm just going back through Leftovers now.
Yeah.
On HBO Go, and it's great. And it's just, all I do is kind of go boop, 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 and The Leftovers is right there. It's very prominently located. It's super easy to get to, and then I'm watching it.
Yeah, and so for those guys, that makes sense. And I think it also makes sense because you can still make money. Like, for example, one of the downsides of me going on and creating DVR space for shows that I recorded, I was like, well, I get FX Now. So I'm just going to delete these like 10 or 6 episodes of The Strain that I hadn't watched yet. I'm just going to watch it on there. Yeah, the problem that I didn't know, because I could have, if I had my DVR, I could just went boop, 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 and fast forwarded to the commercials. But because I didn't do that, and I deleted them, and I sat down the other day to catch up on People versus O.J. Simpson on my FX Now app, and it's like, your program will resume after these. I was like,
yeah.
What? And it took, like, forever. And it's usually the same ad, mm-hmm. which drives me crazy. And then they started stopping it for interstitials about the Americans. And, if I was somebody who just went through the app, I had to watch the commercial. So there's money to be made out there. Just make it available. That's all we're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, they're all experimenting and they don't know the answers either. It does feel like the Hulu catch up strategy is, I love it for the sense that you can catch up if you miss an episode or your DVR malfunctions or something like that. But there's a little hole that they need to fix. And then there are these other questions of, like, if you've got people who are used to binging things, then how do you convert them to be loyal to your thing? I don't know. It's right. I like to see them experimenting. I mean, that's the thing I like, is I'm not quite sure what Sci-Fi's goal was with The Expanse, but they were trying something different, and they did something similar with the first couple episodes of The Magicians, and that was good. And I like HBO's thing where, you know, like Game of Thrones, which is on at 9 o'clock, I believe, at mm-hmm. night.
Yeah.
But you can go, if you're in California, you can go at 6
mm-hmm.
and watch Game of Thrones on HBO Go. It's there. It drops the moment that the show starts on the East Coast, and you can watch it in HD streaming right then. I love that. That's like,
I love that.
Why
yeah.
would you not do that? And it used to not be that way. It used to be like, well, tomorrow you can see. No, I don't want to see it tomorrow. I want to see it now.
Mm-hmm.
Just give it. I'm paying for the service, and I know I'm in California, and it's still light out, but I want to see it.
I still want to see it.
I want to see the dragons now. Give me the dragons now.
It makes sense, and you're right, they are finding their way, but they need to be more savvy about it. And I think they're getting more savvy when they hire people who are not traditional industry people. They're coming mm. from streaming. They're coming from the whole internet culture.
So what do you think about when, so you know, you're talking about outsiders with a different perspective. One of the things that Netflix really pioneered that has taken off in other streaming services too is this idea of dropping the load once.
Mm-hmm.
This,
right.
you know, hey, here's a new season of Daredevil and 13 episodes drop. And then here comes this, you know, another, here comes Flaked. Nobody
right.
wants to see it, but all the episodes are there, right? Or
right.
Master of None. Here are all the episodes of Master of None. So that's different, and people do like binging, but sometimes I wonder, is that the right way to roll out a series? And so how do you think Hulu with 11/22/63 is rolling it out weekly?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a broadcast TV almost. They
mm-hmm.
those episodes premiere weekly rather than dropping all at once. Are they better? Is one better than the other? Is it just different? What do you think?
Well, I can see it works both ways, and I have talked to people, and they you know, that some people don't want to wait, but I think some shows are just not good binge shows. I mean, and Netflix makes a number of them that I don't think are very good binge shows, and it makes I think. There's an argument out there that it can make the story writing lazy, because they're like, well,
yeah.
you know, you'll watch no matter what, because you'll just binge it. You know, I don't have to have a cliffhanger, or I don't have to structure my story arc in a way that is exciting. It's going to be like, hey, that was a good episode, and now I'm going to give you another good episode. Not like, oh my God, I'm going to make this episode so great that you come back next week, because I fear you won't. They don't. That is missing in the Netflix culture.
Psychologically, it's a lot different to say, hey, there's a new TV series coming out that's based on a Marvel comic. You might want to check it out. And hey, we made an 11-hour movie based on a Marvel comic. You might want to watch the movie. For that, I'd be like, whoa, 11-hour movie? Really?
Yeah, right.
That's a big commitment.
Yeah.
But in some cases, that's how they're structured. And, you know, it might be good, but it's not a TV show at that point.
No, it's not. And that changes the viewing experience. And you know, that I don't like that. I also see the reason they do it, because I always say, hey, you're missing out on the, you know, water cooler, quote unquote, talk from week to week, which is why I like the Hulu version better. And Hulu is not afraid. They'll tweak some things. Like sometimes Hulu will say, we're going to drop all five or six or whatever. And then they'll tinker with it. Like, for example, The Path, which we talked about last week, that's coming up on Hulu with Aaron Paul. And it's really well done. Jason Kadams from Parenthood. And it's really strong. The first two episodes are going to be available the first night. And then the rest come out weekly. Mm. And I like that because that builds – you're able to talk about it more. And I think if you are on Twitter and you're following TV critics, you'll see the chatter there. I think if you're with your friends and you can say, hey, did you watch like The Path last night? That was – what a trip. They just did this. Or 11-22-63. And they're like, I can't believe that you look at the closet and you fall out the other side and you're in 1960. So like being able to build word of mouth isn't really important. But I think Netflix says, we already got your $7.99. Right? I think that's their theory. It's like
You just risk losing that word of mouth. It's like, are people going to talk about Jessica Jones more in one chunk, or are they going to talk about Jessica Jones more? Because that's that for me. Looking at something, just taking Jessica Jones as an example, if that show strung out over 13 weeks, there are so many interesting story elements that people would chew on for a week, right?
Yeah,
but there's never a place where everybody is on the same page. And so everybody's afraid to talk about it. So you don't talk about it, or you talk about it in vague terms. And then maybe, you know, 3 months from now, people have finished watching the show and they can talk about it, but it's kind of faded and it's, you know, somebody new just watched it, but somebody else watched it the week it premiered. And I just feel maybe this isn't true. Maybe the big bang at the very beginning is all that matters. But to me, there are episodes of Jessica Jones that my wife and I talked about, but we could not talk to any other person about it because they were all in different places with the show. And that's super frustrating because that would have been like, oh my God, did you see that episode where David Tennant bought her childhood house? How creepy was that? Right. There's this whole thing. You can't talk about it.
No, I know it's maddening. And I don't, the thing that I wonder, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, Netflix, for all their, we're not going to release our ratings, et cetera, et cetera. They are a smart group of people. Yeah. And so they must have analytics on this. Because here's the thing. I think like, and Marvel maybe that's not a good example of it, because people who are Marvel people are going to get it no matter what. But like, for example, if you have a show on Netflix that you can only get it on Netflix, and so you have to subscribe, the current philosophy basically is, okay, we dump everything and, you know, you'll talk about it like one time, like, oh my God, you know, this Netflix show is kind of amazing. And I pick, you know, and then so somewhere in the ether, you're touting a show that no one can get unless they have Netflix. So theoretically, when it hits the ears and eyes of somebody who doesn't have it, they're like, oh, that sounds interesting. Maybe I will buy Netflix. Maybe I'll subscribe.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be better if every week that same message came out rather than sporadically, like you heard it once and then you didn't? If every week somebody's saying, oh my God, this episode, it's getting better, you know, and then it's almost like what Netflix did with, you know, Making of a Murder. It's like if people were binged it, but if they had been talking about that week to week, it'd be the only thing anybody talked about. And it was for a little bit because people were coming to it, but people would still be talking about it because it'd still be on the air.
Right. And Jinx, right? Where everybody really started talking about the last couple of weeks that it was on.
Right. And I think what that does, just from a subscriber philosophy, and obviously Netflix doesn't buy into this, but I think every week, if you're pounding the drum for a show and you're not a subscriber, it just like, oh God, right? Again? Really? Maybe I'll point it up. Look, I know a lot of people, and still people don't have Netflix. Or they have Hulu instead. Or they have Netflix but not Hulu. And to me, it's a strange thing. But so there's tons of people, obviously, that are out there who don't have these streaming services. To get them in, you have to – it's the HBO philosophy. We have a show that you everybody's talking about, and the only way you can get it is to subscribe to us. So I think pounding the drum every week is more effective, but obviously Netflix doesn't think so. And I think the reason that they don't think so, Jason, is because they're worldwide.
I was going to take the kind of devil's advocate perspective and say maybe the reason is, look, we promote the rollout. That's we're doing it like a movie.
Right.
We put all of our energy into launching it. You're never going to get that. You're always going to promote the launch of a new show.
Right.
There's not a lot left after that. It's diminishing returns to promote it after that. And I think they could also argue we're keeping our eye on season two. Like, it's okay if nobody is able to sync up their conversations beyond that it came out. Because what's going to happen is over the year between season one and season two, presuming that this is a successful show, everybody's going to have seen it and there's going to be buzz about it. And the people who haven't seen it are going to go and binge it, and everybody's going to be waiting. And then season two will happen and there'll be another explosion of movie-like promotion for that. And then the same cycle repeats. And maybe from their perspective, it's the long game is all that's important. Is like we do this promotion and then all that really matters is that people get excited when season two comes. Maybe so. I'm not sure, because I keep going back to like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. How much bigger it? So like the Pinot Noir thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of broke out, even though it was in the midst of the 10 or 12 or whatever it was episodes of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt that they produced.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at that and think that would have been huge.
Yeah.
If that was running week to week, because mm-hmm. everybody would have been talking about the Pinot Noir episode and the music video and the song and all of that, which he's apparently doing like an actual Pinot Noir that he's going to sell. I'm not going to drink that. Sorry. But I feel like the viral nature of that episode got totally muted by it being buried in the middle of a run of streaming.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, I agree with you, and I don't think they're going to go back to it.
No.
They obviously have something that works for them, but it's just like,
interesting that Hulu's trying a different tack, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think they should, too, because I think people need to talk about Hulu on a week-to-week basis, because they're transitioning out of, you know, I mean, basically, they're the Plan B pill for television.
They're like iPlayer in the UK. They're the watch again service. They're you missed it and here it is.
Yeah, you missed it.
And that means also that Hulu's pace is weekly, right? It is a service that is sort of rolling out shows weekly. So mm-hmm. why not add originals in that way? But
right.
It'll be interesting to see if they change, right? Because that would be a vindication of Netflix if they decide, next time we're going to just drop all of it at once.
Right, and Amazon is a mixture of it seems to be like a mixture of both. Sometimes they're rolling out when they were doing the New Yorker Presents, they put that in a funky thing too. They wanted it to be more of a weekly thing because it's an ongoing series. So yeah, but they do dump to, so they're kind of a mix. They do it both ways.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about future of TV?
Well, look, the streaming thing is the one thing that I find interesting about it, and I keep bringing this up in like small doses, but I will eventually get to the point where I start writing about Acorn, the service. I think it's $5,
right?
And maybe it's because we're in the Bay Area, but everybody seems to know about PBS and BBC America and all these great British series. And to get these great British series, you can, you know, it's like, I think they just, I think Acorn was super excited because NPR called them Netflix for the Anglophile, which is interesting because I think Acorn was like, that's what we want to be called that. Even they didn't come up with it, but you know, and NPR did it for them, Netflix for the Anglophile. And I always talk to people. And they ask me about what shows that I'm watching, and then I'm like, well, what do you get? What do you subscribe for on their cable channel? And they can't really tell me. So those people, I'm always like, okay, if it's not for live sports or whatnot, I would have just killed cable and I'd be all streaming, and Acorn would be one of them. But to me, it's like more stuff like this is going to happen. We're going to get you're going to be able to get like Netflix and Hulu and Acorn, and then CBS. Maybe when their thing bloats up and it's all Star Trek and awesome. And you know what? It's going to the future's there. I would be very worried if I was in the cable world. But I always tell people right now, like I would kill my cable bill right now. I would not pay for cable right now because there's so much stuff on the shelf.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much stuff. And then you can get HBO, you know, now, I just call it HBO Now or something, not Go.
Yeah. But over the top. You can get HBO and Showtime and yeah.
They're all over the top. You can get all those things. And it's a way to trim your cable bill. I mean, And I think you can – I know that the argument is at some point everything will be a service, and by the time you add it up, it'll cost more than your cable bill and you won't get as much.
Yep.
But I still believe that you have to be highly selective, and you, and it's all about branding. You know, like I would pay – you know, I want FX – you know, FX Now if it was over the top, because they've got a lot of great stuff I could watch. But HBO, over the top, if I wasn't a subscriber, I would get it for sure.
Yeah. All right, should we do some letters?
Let's do that.
All right, well, before we get to the letters, I'll tell you about our sponsor. This week's episode of the TV Talk Machine brought to you by Harry's. That's
Yay!
Right, fine shaving products. I've been using Harry's for a while now. And
I do too.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. So here's the deal. March, I got some numerology for you here. March,
okay.
Third month of the year, but it's also the third anniversary of Harry's.
Oh.
I don't know. Now, the 75th, we've established diamond anniversary,
diamonds.
Right? Uh-huh. This is episode 75. Third year anniversary, I don't know. It may be the shaving anniversary.
It may be the shaving anniversary.
It's possible.
It would, something.
So, this is a great opportunity for everybody out there. If you're new to Harry's, we've got a special deal. You can try three of their expertly crafted five-blade German razors. They bought the factory in Germany that makes their razor blades. Harry's owns it now. It's kind of amazing. You'll get those three five-blade razors, a handle, and their shave cream, which I really love. It's like this minty, it's really good shave cream. Mm. It has converted me. I will never go back to my Edge shave gel. $10 with the offer code TVTalk. That's right. So, you know, five blades seems a little bit over the top. And yet, I got to say, I have never gotten a better shave than when I started using Harry's blades. I used to have all sorts of problems with shaving, getting the right equipment, having it not chafe my face and all that. And the five-blade razor from Harry's does a great job. And like I said, I love the shave cream, too. And
yeah.
The handle's beautiful. I got an orange handle now. They got this cool orange handle.
Giant's Colors.
It's Giant's Colors. That's right. Mm-hmm. And I endorse this.
And you can probably get one in your market. That is whatever your team color is, but yeah, we both use it. I mean, we're not even kidding. We do.
No.
We use it. I love it.
We are clean shaven people.
Yes,
what we're saying.
I look terrible with facial hair. By the way,
it's not.
It's a total non-starter.
If they made a thing that you could rub on your face that would mean you never grew a beard, I would buy that.
Yeah,
and use that like the magic permanent no beard. But they don't.
Face.
So instead, I rub the Harry shaving cream on my face and then use their razor, and that's what makes the difference. So let's sum this up: 3 years in business, month number three, March. So you know. It goes without saying, whatever that is. German-engineered five-blade cartridges, a close, comfortable shave, no cuts, no razor burn, quality is guaranteed, a full refund if you're not happy with it. Factory direct prices, you cut out the middleman, it ships right to your door, so you don't have to wander the streets of the aisles of your local drugstore. Not good. I am always creeped out when I go to my local drugstore.
Yeah.
And then have to find a clerk to unlock the thing, to give you the... Forget about it. And Harry's Blades... Half the price of the leading brands anyway. So why not do this? Over 1 million people have made the switch. Thousands more switch every day. Don't pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at harrys.com. So $15, you'll get a razor, shave cream, three razor blades, $5 off your first order. So this is even like now, how much would you pay? $15? I know that's low. We will give you $5 off of that if it's your first order using the promo code TVTalk. So stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to harrys.com right now, HARRYS.com, and enter code TVTalk at checkout. Thank you, Harry's.
Thanks, Harry's. That's good.
I love having sponsors.
Yeah, it's always good to have sponsors, especially ones you support. I would tell people to go Google it, and then put your order in with your TVTM, and you'll see a ton of ink about Harry's. Good company.
Yep. So here's some letters. We got some
All
letters.
Right. Let's do that.
This is from MVP716. I'm going
nice.
To assume the 716 area code. Tim and Jason, when The Americans was first announced, I thought it was going to be a second-rate Homeland ripoff, but right from the start, it proved to be a show willing to take chances, and it won me over with its great ensemble of actors and fearless storytelling. My question is, why does it do so poorly in the ratings? Did people shy away from having the heroes be Russians? Are they intimidated by the serialized nature? At times, it seems like the higher quality of the show... I'm looking at you, Rectify. The worse a show does. Thankfully, FX has kept renewing the show, or this really would have been a loss. What do you think?
It's amongst TV critics, we are all mystified. we're all mystified why more people are not watching The Americans. It is one of the best shows on TV. It's been in my top five. It's constantly. I love it. And I don't know. And there is the theory that once you miss the first season, you're never going to come back unless you go back and you binge it, which I'm hoping people are. And I think that's partly why they kept it around. Other than the fact that it is also, you know, and they don't get Emmy love for it too. That's a super crime because, you know, Carrie and Matthew are amazing actors. They do great work. The writing is solid. All the guest stars on it are amazing. The story arcs are interesting not from a spy level, but country versus country. I don't know. Maybe there's something. That's Kerry Russell and Matthew Rice, by the way. It's not like I know them. It could be something that it's Russians who are they're the main characters, and you know, we don't like the Russians. I don't know what it is. Maybe people thought, well, we know how this ends. Right, because right, it's sure. The evil empire. But that does not to say that's how this story is going to end, because there's clearly still Russian spies in this country. So I don't know. I don't know why people are not watching it. But since we just talked so much about streaming, people can definitely go back out and catch up. And you know, that's one I would invest in, because top tier TV, one of the very best in the platinum age, and worth your whatever hours you invest in catching up, and you should do that.
So I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. I say this as somebody who watched episode one of The Americans and never went back.
Oh.
And now I feel bad about it, and I keep meaning to go back and watch it because, you know, as the years have gone on, it's been more clear that people really love it. But I watched that first episode when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a while, so I'm trying to think of why. My memory of it is I thought it was – so it's a period piece, so that's a little bit – it can be more difficult to access. I lived through the 80s. I remember it very well. So, but still, and you know, it starts out kind of hard to like. I have to say it, that like that we meet these characters, and the first time we meet these characters, who are what we're told is, okay, they look like they're husband and wife, but they're actually one, Russian spies,
right,
and two, like. I gotta say, you know, having sex with other people as part of their job, and it's kind of gross. I mean, honestly, I was like, why, you know, I did not become engaged in, like, who are these people? These are interesting characters. I want to know more about them. I'm like, you know, this is an icky story about icky people in an icky time. Maybe I'll just give this one a pass. And if you had said, but no, keep watching because it's going to be the best show on TV for the next 5 years. You know what? I would have done it. But instead, I just got turned off by the first episode. It did not seem like fun to me. It seemed kind of unpleasant. And so I just said, I'm going to give it a pass.
Wow.
So that's my theory. That's my theory. And I regret it now. I totally regret it now because I've heard so many great things about it. But that first episode really turned me off. And that's all I can say. I can't say that that's true for everybody, but that was what it was for me.
That's funny because that's not, you know, that's it's good insight. That's clearly was a theory and it was your experience. But like, I didn't have that because I guess I got the first four episodes and watched them all. Right?
I feel like if I had stuck with it even a little bit longer, it would have been a different story. But I just watched the first episode. I have a friend who did that with Fargo season one. He did not like the first episode and he was like, forget it. And and I took his advice and didn't watch it. And then I was like, well, oops.
Well, yeah.
Right?
But
it says something about trying to close the deal, right? I mean, how much patience does a viewer have? Some viewers, like me, when I watch The Americans, I obviously was not going to give this more than an episode if it didn't hook me. And it didn't. And that was to my detriment in the end. But that's how it worked.
That's fascinating because I know that like I've heard of this one I didn't hear about, but I've heard of other ones where like I'm always stunned when I hear people say, no, I didn't get into, and I hear this a lot actually, I didn't get into Breaking Bad. I'm like, it's one of the greatest pilots of all time. So like how did that not happen? And they're like, no, I watched the pilot and I liked it, and then it was just too dark for me. And it's true, the first three episodes of the first season are really pretty dark.
They are.
And that scared a lot of people away. And I always tell them now, five seasons later in the Hall of Fame, go back, struggle through it, because it gets It doesn't get less dark, but it's really brilliant sometimes. But you know what? Some people don't want to watch shows like that. So
that's also true. And mm-hmm. it may be. So my theory is about that the first episode kind of put me off of it. But it's also possible that a period piece about Russian spies is not necessarily what a lot of viewers want to watch.
Yeah, and you know, it's I've had this experience where just pilots have put me. Well, obviously, network pilots for sure. But it's funny, a lot of critics and me included. I'm a big fan of Slings and Arrows. It's such a great series. It's so much in. There's so much in it, and so much great writing and amazing actors. And I'm always a big proponent of people like tell me something I don't know and I've never heard about or whatever, and I'll go do it. So I always say Slings and Arrows. I got to say, I went back, Jason. This is an older story, but I went back and I watched that first episode of Slings and Arrows, and it is so boring and so long. And I'm like, oh my God, this thing is slow. It's like a snail's pace, not even like Rectify pace. It was just because Rectify was weird and interesting and ethereal kind of in its own way. This was just like, wow, this is too long. It's funny in this part, but it's too long. And what am I watching? Because the rest of the episodes pick up and they're great. But
yeah,
I'm sure there are a lot of people who never came back to tell me, yeah, that advice you gave me, not good. But had they stuck with it, they would know.
See, that's the challenge, is how much are you willing to put in on the hopes that it will be better later?
Absolutely.
And that's where knowing if I knew that over the next 5 years, people would be talking about The Americans as one of the best shows on TV, I would have put in the time. And that's the beauty of binge watching. You can go back and it's all there for you. Okay, we heard from Matt in the +44. This is the bottle episode. Our buddy who binged us all the way up to present and now just seems to listen every week.
I love it. Love it.
He says, hello, Mr. Goodman Snell. As a fan of live music and seeing a lot of bands self-fund tours and albums, the conversation about Louis C.K. funding his own TV series that he sells only through his website reminded me a lot of those levels of bands. They fund themselves recording and setting up physical releases to send to fans and customers and hope to break even through selling the records. A lot of times they don't, but I quite like the DIY culture of bands wanting complete control over their music and releasing it on their own terms. It may not get the promotion or distribution as bands on small independent or major record labels, but the option is there. I'm assuming this is what Louis C.K. is doing, so he has full control over what he wants to do and is relying on his name, fan base, and TV critics to advertise it. I can see the appeal, as the only person he's accountable to is himself. Do you think this could be something that other people may try to do down the line? Isn't this similar to web series that are hosted on YouTube by smaller production companies? Who would be capable of doing this? Would it be possible? Or is this a concept that may be decades before its time?
That is a great question, particularly the part about, you know, who could do this. I remember thinking at the time that it happened that it was perfect for Louis C.K. because he's always been in that indie mode. And he's, you know, sells tickets to his own stand-up shows and films and, you know, makes complete sense to me, especially given with the fact that he is so DIY with his FX series. But I don't know. Look, there's tons of people. I mean, you can certainly do – bands can do it. I mean, that seems like all the bands that are big enough to have, million-plus fan club, they probably don't need to do that because they're on a record label. So right. I'm with him in that I like the comparison to indie bands. And that's just how it had to happen for them. And that's – for me, when I write about music now, I think about that a lot because you can't keep up with any of the music. It's just so millions of bands you've never heard of that you actually might like. That's my theory. But on the TV angle, I don't know who could do it again. Like, you have to be a pretty big deal, and you'd have to want to do it. That's the thing that kind of strikes me about this. Louis C.K. wants to do it. I don't know if anybody else would say, yeah, I'm going to put a lot of sweat equity into this and make it mine, because it would be easier for their agent to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to pitch that to Comedy Central and they're going to do it. You know what I mean? They'll do all the heavy lifting. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. there are a couple levels here, right? There are the, is this like, you know, I'm on some of these, like They Might Be Giants has like an internet fan club thing you can do. And Mike Doty, who used to be in Soul Coughing, he's done a couple of those things where you can kind of buy access to some rarities in the next album when it comes out and you get a ticket to the concert. And I've done a few of those. And then there's also the Radiohead level, which is like, we just can release an album now on the internet and sell it ourselves. And we don't care because we've got enough of a fan base that it doesn't matter. I feel like Louis C.K., you know, he's Radiohead in this scenario, right? He has reach that nobody else has and the disposition and the skills and all of those other things. So I'm sure there are other people who could do it, but part of it's got to be just his personality, right? I mean, I don't know, Tina Fey could do it maybe, but she wouldn't, right? I mean,
she could do it, yeah. I mean, but yeah, and that's, I think, going back to my point, she could totally do it, and she could do the rest of her story of her things on Netflix, but she's going back to NBC for her next one, so
yeah. Yeah, so
look at that. That's her saying, I got a kid and I got all this other stuff I'm doing. I'm not going to do all the heavy lifting of.
I think Louis C.K. is driven to do this. I mean, right? Because he doesn't have to do it. Like, we know that John Landgraf said that, you know, he basically said, can we help you with this? And then Louis C.K. is like, nope, I just want to do it myself. And that's the, you know, they keep making the Woody Allen comparisons with him, but I think that's legit in some ways. Like, he wants complete control over everything he does. He's got a very specific sensibility, and you know, this is the show that he's making, and he will make some interesting decisions like this. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's cool that you can do it though, right? Like, anybody who has the will and the reach can make their own TV show now. Like Louis C.K. has shown, you don't need a network. You don't need a studio. I mean, you need like a TV studio to shoot it in, but you don't need like backing. If you've got the money and the reach and the talent, you literally need nothing else.
That's crazy. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm more power to him. So, but yeah, I don't think that you're going to get that many self-starters.
Yeah.
Doing that. You know, bands have to do it because they have to, basically, but in the deflated music world, but I'm not sure you need to do that now on television.
So we got one here from Min in the +47.
Okay.
Which is Norway, I believe.
Norway. Okay.
Norway. Mm-hmm. Said, I've recently moved from the Five and Dime.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. One pleasant discovery has been Netflix carry some U.S. shows, including Better Call Saul and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, releasing these episodes online within a day or two of air. A peculiarity is these episodes have a Netflix original series logo as part of the opening credits. Does that mean anything? I assume Netflix is just an international distributor and not actually a producer. It also seems random what shows they have. For example, they have Saul, but not The Walking Dead. They have Agent Carter, but not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Any insight into how shows get picked for this? Sounds to me like they, you know, this is an easier way to get your international distribution is to get Netflix to pay you instead of selling into some of these markets.
Yeah, that's probably, especially the more, because Netflix is plowing headlong into the rest of the world. Yeah, it's probably easier.
Right.
I mean, the infrastructure is there.
Mm-hmm. You could sell Agent Carter to a network in Norway, but, you know, is that a priority? Are they really, and maybe they didn't even have any takers. That's the other possibility. It's like, look, it's easier to just put this on. Netflix is going to buy this in 18 countries and they're going to write us a check. So, you know, yes, here, take it.
Right. And Netflix says, we get to put on there a Netflix original.
Yeah, that's right. And then we've got this pre-roll. We just roll that in there, and people in Norway will never know the difference.
They'll never know. You're from the Five and Dime, and you're like, that's not true.
Yeah.
That's not yours.
Min in the +47 is breaking down all of the barriers now.
Nice.
But what is cool, and this goes back, this is like the theme of this episode, is previously a show like that would just be not available, right? In all these countries.
Not existence.
Like, we didn't sell it. It didn't go there, whatever. And instead, somebody, Netflix or whoever else, can pick that up and say, yeah, that's totally for us. We'll run that. That's the world we live in. That's cool. All right. Andrew in the 925 writes, longtime listener, second time emailer. on a recent podcast, you said HBO doesn't care about how many people viewed the live airing of Vinyl. What does HBO care most about? The reason I ask is togetherness. Season 2 is getting about 2/3 of the ratings of Vinyl. The second episode had just 430,000 live viewers. And unlike Vinyl, there aren't any big-name producers HBO needs to stay chummy with. Perhaps strong reviews keep the show alive, but togetherness was only able to get 12 critics to add their Season 2 reviews to Metacritic. AV Club routinely gives episodes of the show an A, but they only get like 50 comments or so there isn't much discussion. Future Emmys seem a long shot. Don't get me wrong, I find togetherness quite watchable, but there's no one to discuss it with. There's no buzz. I highly doubt anybody maintains their HBO subscription because they can't live without togetherness and forget about overseas viewers. So why does HBO keep this alive? Is it low cost? Is there nothing on the bench? Are they unwilling to cancel a show that's well-liked by critics? Andrew in the 925.
That's a good question. Well, there's a couple of things in play. I think first and foremost, their business model is certainly having to change a little bit because it was, you know, as you remember, it's not TV, it's HBO.
Right.
It's basically we're better than everybody because we make better shows. And at the time they did. That's not so true anymore. And now there's so many other people who do great work. You can't say, well, here's a great show you can't get anywhere else. Well, yeah, you actually kind of can get togetherness like 10 other places, versions of white people having divorces, yeah. And, you know, whatever. But like-minded shows like that, they can. But their model is basically, we're coming to togetherness after the fact. So, and Vinyl has superstar producers tied to it in Scorsese. I get what he's saying. But let's go back to Game of Thrones, probably a better example, before it was, you know, worldwide sensation. They picked Game of Thrones because they wanted to do that story. They believed in it. They believed in the people who were making it. And the idea is that's the perfect storm for them because you can't get something as good as Game of Thrones. You get similar things, but Game of Thrones is, you know, that's the top of the game. That's it in that sort of that genre. I don't think you can get a better show. So if you want to get that show, you got to subscribe to HBO. And they're making money on that probably, but the difference is like if that show wasn't like when they had The Wire, everybody was talking about The Wire and they had to see it or they wanted to see it, but you had to subscribe to it. And The Wire didn't get any Emmys, but the idea is you get Emmys and it drives people to come back. So they're a subscription service, so ratings are never going to matter. Like we said before, if they could put they've already said this to me, if they could put the genie back in the bottle, they would do it. They would not release any of their ratings because that's not their model.
So in the end, it's sort of holistic. It's like, you know, they want to have different shows for different people and have good relationships with good creators and make the value of the service overall enough that people want to keep paying for it.
Well, and then the second part of it, which is more modern, because I basically covered the beginning of HBO till now when they have HBO-like entities. I think what's driving HBO to keep shows like Togetherness on the air you know, whether it gets we'll see if it gets a third season. But, you know, they need content. They have to keep up with Netflix. And so that's right. Part of it, right? Like, I think that drives HBO insane. I really do. I think it drives them insane. Like damn it. Like,
Netflix can't just have four shows and then run a bunch of old movies anymore.
Yeah, this doesn't work. And so people are going to say, well, I can either pay $14.99 over the top or, you know, somewhere in my $97 cable bill, I get you and Showtime, or, you know what I mean? But people want more and more. What do you have? And if you don't have stuff on the shelf, Netflix does, right? So that's where they're going to go. So they have to have more shows. They got to keep it up. But you're right. I think that, I'm not sure we can find it in time to link to it, but there's a deep in the probably the last 3 weeks or so, Hollywood Reporter did a very good story about wow, what's going on at HBO? And what I loved about that story was it was like, okay, so they're not the only, you know, quality. They're not the diamond. How about that? They're not the diamond of the television industry anymore. There's a lot of diamonds. And so what do they mean now? What is life for HBO is kind of an existential problem for them. And gosh, I got to say, the article brought to light a lot of stops and starts, which you don't see with anybody else. It's like they greenlit something, they went into it, and they halted production and to fix it. And, you know, HBO says, well, yeah, we did that with Game of Thrones, and we got it right. But you know what? That Game of Thrones pilot was not that bad. And it was probably going to work no matter what. But they've had a lot of stops and starts, which makes you think, like, why did you give up on it? Like, why did you buy it? So there's a lot of – the story brought up a lot of, like, what's going on at HBO. Who's running the show? Are they running it well? Are they choking because they're competing so hard with Netflix? Have they lost the mojo? Are they doubting themselves? They don't know what's going to be a hit or what's going to work. I don't know, but I do know the bottom line is, in the current atmosphere, Jason, they have to have stuff on the shelf. They have to have content.
That's really a good point, that they need the back catalog now, because they're closest analog and their closest competition is Netflix, which has not just their originals but their catalog of content that you can tap. And HBO Go, you know, it's they're building up a good catalog, but still, yeah, it's not Netflix.
No, and I, you know me, I'm a huge fan of the HBO Go app. I mean, there's so much gold in there.
Oh yeah,
oh my God, that is an incredible vault. But yeah, modern day, you need more togetherness. And you know, even though you're going to find like all this, like Love over on Netflix and all these other things that seem similar to it.
Let's do one more. This is a nice one to end on, I think. Clive, also from the +44.
Okay. That's a very
with a name like Clive. I would hope you were in the +44. It was with great expectations that I watched the first two episodes of Agent X, as highly recommended by Tim, and I was not disappointed. Agent X is indeed batshit crazy. Excuse me while I check the box. Thank you, Clive.
Clive did it. He checked
maybe not as batshit crazy as Zero Hour from way back in 2013, but it definitely has promise. I can see why you consider the show worthy of a drinking game. My brilliant plan is to just drink continuously throughout each episode. It seems like a perfectly reasonable course of action to me. I can't wait for the Blu-ray. Clive in the +44.
So. Nice, Clive. Golf clap. Very good.
We are still getting people drunk all around the world simultaneously, apparently. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that's enough for now. I think we've done enough damage, don't you?
We did, yeah. We got a little evergreen. We got a little wonky.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt every now and then.
Diamond hard, diamond sharp.
Exactly.
Sparkly.
Oh,
all those
man.
Things.
And I didn't even Columbo you.
Well, now's the time, because I'm about to read the numbers. Do you realize there are no numbers in the numbers anymore?
I do know that. Oh, I'm going to Columbo you.
All right. There we go.
Okay. I'm going to Columbo you
right
here.
Yes, detective. What is it?
Okay, so here's – some people will say to me, hey, why is Bosch – I say that because last week, Friday, March 11th, was the start of Bosch.
Ah, Amazon's Bosch.
Amazon – yeah, no.
No? Is it not Amazon's
Bosch? Oh, it
is
Amazon's Bosch.
Amazon's,
sorry, yes.
Amazon's Bosch season 2.
Right. People were like, why isn't that – because I think it's kind of a network series.
Right.
And people were like, why is Amazon doing Bosch? And I'm like, hey, if you look at Amazon – they're doing a lot of stuff that doesn't seem like it wants to be HBO. They just want like shows. And so that goes into our, because people are asking like, why Bosch? It kind of seems like a CBS show. I mean, I guess that they've made it a little more sexier and darker now, but honestly, it's been kind of a network show. And I say, well, now Amazon, like everybody else, they need content. So like they'll take your Bosch. They don't care if it looks like CBS. We'll stick something else on there too. You know, we got Mozart in the Jungle. Sure, let's put that on there because we need content, because everybody's trying to – content is king.
That's right. Fuller House doesn't feel like a Netflix original, does it? But there it is.
Oh, my God. Right? As you said very hilariously to me, Platinum Age.
Yep.
Fuller House renewed.
What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive.
All right. Here are the numbers. You can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. That is, you can pour your heart out in an email to us. You can also tweet at us @TVTM. That works too. You can post in the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. I haven't looked in the Facebook group for the last week. I'm sorry, Facebook. I'll come back to you next time. I promise. Sorry, Facebook. And you can tweet at us. I'm Jay Snell, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. That's it. Tim, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a diamond. You're a diamond in the rough,
Jason. Oh, nice diamond reference there. Well, we'll be back next time with number 76, and I'm sure we'll be back to timeliness, and we'll leave the evergreen behind for a little while.
Okay.
Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.